So where are we headed today? I'm going to do a little bit of context setting, and then David asked me to share a couple of models with you. One of them is from the book, and thank you for the great marketing pitch on that it's not just for pastors, although it was kind of written for pastors. And so please give it to your pastor if you don't want to read it. And then we're going to talk about how you can think about analyzing your own industry with a particular way of thinking about making all things new. And I love that you started with that, Josh, because I had like an abrupt, like lightning bolt learning about faith and work. Within like, oh my gosh, I have missed it my entire faith journey. And that was in about 2012. And so I worked in business for the first 12 to 15 years of my career. I worked in banking, I worked at management consulting, and I worked hard and I loved the achievement hit. I loved that next one on the annual review or getting the client or whatever it was. To a fault, I now understand, but I learned an incredible amount. I got to work in Southeast Asia, I got to work in New York, I got to work in Chicago, but my faith was like way to the side, Sunday faith only at best. And we moved to Nashville in 01, and I ended up being a part of a team. It was a consulting project at first, and then it turned into a job for the next 10 years of my life, and that was to help start a new high school that is now Innsworth High School, if you've ever been to that campus on a Highway 100. And I had been on the business track for 12 years and was doing a tiny little six-week consulting firm project on should this be a thing, and the head of school said, hey, will you join us on the launch team? And I said yes in like less than 15 hours, taking a total shift from business to education, and did not have the construct for it, but in my being, I wanted to do more for God. So I thought I was moving from the like D team of management consulting in God's eyes to the B team. Like, at least I'm now doing a helping profession. Surely creating a school matters more to God than making 25 cents more per share for that large company I've been working for. And so I was like, oh, yes, I had refound my faith, or I should say Jesus had refound me. I'd been through a meaningful faith experience, and I was ready to serve God. And so he is sovereign. He knew what he was doing. I'm so glad I worked at that school for 10 years, but it was for the wrong reason. It was so I could be working for God. And then halfway into that, my oldest daughter, who you'll hear more about later, who's 28, got an extraordinarily tough illness. And she was out of school for 4 years, and we were in a fight for her life for kind of 2.5 of those 4 years. And that was a new layer of surrender that I had not experienced before. I had not really experienced a problem that doubling down and working harder couldn't fix. So I was like, okay. And it was a new layer of surrender that ended up leading me to seminary at night. And in seminary at night, in my second semester, I discovered faith and work theology, or I would say it discovered me. And that's when I was like, I have missed it. I am now at that time, I was in my mid-40s, and I was like, I've worked all these years not understanding at all that my work mattered to God. And so here we are today, sitting in Grace Church. I've been in the faith and work space for about 10 years, but it's just a context to show you that it's been a big learning journey for me, and I feel like we're all learning together. Even preparing my presentation, I was still learning. All right, so now I have to figure out why I can't change my slides from here. All right. So I want to remind you, what is work? We all know what work is. We say, oh, I got to go to work, or oh, I get to go to work, or I love my work, or I hate my work. I like to actually define work as any activity involving mental or physical effort done in order to achieve a purpose or a result. So we do a lot of paid work in our lives, and we do a lot of unpaid work in our lives. I do not like to unload the dishwasher. That is actually work. That is an activity involving some physical effort to achieve a little bit of structure in my home. I will go days not unloading the dishwasher, and I will admit to putting a new dish in the unloaded dishwasher that's clean and washing them all again so that I do not have to unload them. Has anyone else ever done that? My husband's like, they're clean. I'm like, we're washing them again. So very wasteful. But it is an activity to receive a result that I don't love. But we all do all kinds of work. The other way to think of it is work is anything that's not leisure and not rest. We get paid for a lot of it. Not leisure, not rest. And so as you think about this day, chances are a lot of you are doing paid work, and you want to understand why your paid work matters to God, but why does unloading the dishwasher matter to God? It is bringing structure out of chaos and trying to call it good, just like the creation account. And so I want you to think today about work as more than just how you're getting paid, because I think it helps us lead a more integrative whole life. And so we're going to go quickly. I think if you've been here the 4 years, you've heard this before. If you're new, maybe you haven't. But we're going to look at work in the biblical narrative really quickly. And so, you know, the Bible is really just one big story from creation to restoration with the fall and redemption in the middle. And I want to talk to you about how work can be thought through in the story of the Bible. So first is the creation account. We have all heard the creation account several times. We've all heard both creation accounts several times. But what I love when you stop and slow down about the creation account is this pattern that you see. And you say, you know, it's on day one, things are created. On day two, things are creative. And then it says, and he called them good. And he called them good. And then he gets to humans, and he says, and he called them very good. And every single day has a pattern of chaos, void. At some point, some certain days it's called void into the void, but chaos, and then God, in his creativity, brings structure and makes things and says, and we call it good. And that, I would say, is the pattern of all of our work. Every single thing from making a spreadsheet to unloading the dishwasher to trying to determine what the M&A price is for a corporate acquisition to what is the lease price for real estate to how does Sopapillas get the food out on time. It is chaos, doing things that bring structure, trying to bring goodness, trying to call it good. So he gave us the pattern for work. He created us to work. And when he made us, he put his image within us. So he made us a creator. He made us a pattern maker, a taking chaos, bringing structure, call it good. And then he said, be fruitful and multiply. And then he said, go out and take dominion. But if you read several biblical commentaries, that can be summarized into go out and create flourishing. So he is this creator, this person that created this earth, put his image in us. So we have this creative net, we have this creativity, we have this ability. And then he said, go out and create flourishing. He started with go out and name the stuff. He gave us a creative task at the very beginning. Go out and create flourishing. And so just learning this was so exciting for me. I had only known of work was to give me self-actualization, make me feel great about myself, or be busy enough I run from pain, and to pay the bills, pay the rent, pay for the kids, pay, right? So to have just this new vision of work was like, oh my goodness, I'd missed it. And I'm just curious, is this a new concept for you? Raise your hand if this in and of itself is a new concept for you. Couple of you, but I hope that you can marinate on this concept no matter how many times you've heard it when you're discouraged at work. Because the fact that we were made to work Doesn't mean we were made for paid work. Not everyone's doing paid work. Some people are retired doing community work. That is work. It's not rest. It's not leisure. But there was the fall. So sin entered the world. The world is broken. Work is broken. It promises us in Genesis 3 that work will have toil. Why are we surprised? Why do we get so frustrated that work has toil? We are promised it has toil. The fall came. People are broken. Systems are broken. I don't need to spend time on this because you all feel it every single day in your work. Whether it's your parenting work, whether it's your paid work, your leadership, you feel the toil. You are betrayed by people. You see broken systems. You see exploitation. It is so frustrating. But we are part of a story where Jesus incarnate has come. And he has come to reconcile all things to himself. All things. That was new learning for me when I discovered faith and work. I was like, oh, it's not just like people. Like we're saved, we go live on a cloud, like in heaven. No, all things. So if you wrap your mind about what does it mean if he is redeeming capitalism and taking the exploitation out of capitalism? What would it mean to believe that Warner Parks, that lost 2,000 trees, that he's here to redeem that to himself? What would it mean to think about commercial real estate, that those buildings could be here? He's redeeming these things to himself, not just people. Which takes us to restoration. I know, I think this church calls it consummation. But the new heaven and new earth, and thinking about heaven and my upbringing in the church in my early years in adult faith, I had no theology of heaven other than it was after this. And the little I did came from like childhood picture books. And I was like, playing a harp on a cloud sounds boring to me. Like, why would I want to go to heaven? That sounds a little boring. And then when I studied N.T. Wright's Surprised by Hope, if you want to study this, the new heaven and the new earth, it is just unbelievably fascinating to imagine. Like in Revelation, the ships of Tarsus are coming in. The ships of Tarsus, earlier in Isaiah, had represented the evils of capitalism. And so that means like a redeemed capitalism coming into the new heaven and new earth. So no more crying, no more gnashing of teeth. It's the excitement of imagining our work in the new heaven and new earth. Doctors may have a new calling. Psychologists and counselors may have a new calling. People who are dealing with brokenness may have new callings. But imagine music in the new heaven and earth. Imagine making roads, all kinds of things. No more potholes. That'd be great. So just kind of in summary, literally work is part of God's unfolding plan for the world. It's not just a sideshow that we're here doing, waiting for something else. We were created for it. It brings structure out of chaos in his pattern. It's part of his plan for restoration, and it's part of the new heaven and the new earth, which is also interesting to think we might be working in the new heaven and the new earth. And so what does it allow for here and now? And I love to think of it as two, there's kind of an on-ramp and an off-ramp. It is an on-ramp to heart change. And so it is a great place where the inward journey with God is being cultivated, partially because of all that toil. We get really frustrated with our work. We also get too focused on our work or not focused enough on our work. And so one's idolatry. Like, it is everything, I am my work, and one is kind of laziness or sloth, it is nothing, it's a necessary evil. And so these are places for God to work with us on our inner journey with him about work so that we go out. So that's how we can impact our organizations, our industries, our cities, the world. It is through the outward work of our hands. But it is not without that inner journey. So it is the inner journey that informs the outer journey. And so let's talk about the inner journey and why our hearts are so ripe. This is a quote from a survey. This survey was done a number of years ago by Gallup. It was before the pandemic. And they surveyed people in 160 countries with the question of trying to find out what matters to people. whether they're in rural India or Wall Street, are there similarities that matter to people? And the CEO of Gallup, who at the time was Jim Clifton, said this is the single most important finding in the history of Gallup. And it is how important work is to people. And this is why it is an on-ramp for God to work, because we care about it so much. Humans used to desire love, money, food, shelter, safety, peace, and freedom more than anything else. But the last 30 years have changed us. Now people want to have a good job, and they want their children to have a great, actually good job. This changes everything for world leaders, everything they do, from waging war to building societies, will need to be carried out within the context of the need for a good job. So literally, whether people were in India or in New York City, what popped as more important to them than love or safety or food was a good job. I can double click and start arguing, well, that's because it's an avenue towards the safety or towards the food. Yes, and yes, and yes. But the fact that people care this much about something makes it an on-ramp for the gospel. Because the gospel changes everything. And if you want your heart to be further formed, look at what's really important to you. And this survey tells me this is really important to you. And if you want evangelism to happen, then we have to make the gospel relevant to what's important to the people we want to evangelize to. And look what's important to the people we want to evangelize to. There's another Gallup survey that talks about the level of engagement people have with their work. In the United States, despite work mattering this much, 70% of people are disengaged to neutral about their work. Only 30% of people in the United States are neutral towards positive about their work. So we've got 70% of people in our country walking around like, ugh, about work, when this other Gallup survey says it's the most important thing in people's lives. So that is both a disconnect and an opportunity for people to understand work as part of God's unfolding story in a way for God to work and move in people's hearts. So that is why it's an area for heart change. And why is it an area for city renewal? So I love this quote. It's written by a friend of mine named Matt Koehmig, who was at Fuller University until recently, which is a seminary in LA. He has a book called Work and Workmanship. The city will be renewed not by 5 church planters and 5 nonprofit leaders. And I just want to pause there for a moment. I don't know about this church because I haven't attended this church, but I have attended church after church after church who says, oh yes, I really value work, but hey, we need to do some good things for our city, and so we're going to serve the homeless. And I think, or whatever it is, whatever need, and I wholly believe in serving the homeless. And we're not going to change a city with churches doing like one little thing at a time. Right? The city will be renewed not by 5 church planters and 5 nonprofit leaders. It will be renewed by the complex callings and careers of the 500 other people sitting in the pews. And why is that? Because you guys can only maybe like 1 to 5 hours a month go serve the homeless. That is in your volunteer time. What if you are serving and loving people, places, and things to life the other 40 to 50 hours of your work week? And you think of your entire work week as the way you're going out and serving your church. Instead of, I'm going to go to work, get the stuff done, make the paycheck, and then I'll go serve the homeless. And still serve the homeless. I'm not asking you to, please don't quote me as Missy doesn't believe unhomed people should be served. I'm not suggesting that. I'm saying imagine if we were serving 40 hours a week instead of 1 hour a week in our volunteer time. And that's what Matt writes about. The mission of the local church is not limited to a single outreach program. It's not limited to a single missionary. It is pluriform, complex, and all-inclusive. The church's mission is embodied in the diverse work of all the people all over the city. So I hope that every single time you go to church, your pastor is saying, your work matters, go out, and therefore. And if not, come read Matt's book because it will encourage you as well on that over and over. So I mentioned that the inward journey informs the outward journey. I teach a course, and a lot of this course is about this triad of heart, community, world. And it's about becoming a fully faith and work, holistic, integrated leader. And by that, what we mean is the heart level is that you are communing with Jesus first and foremost. And there you have like unoccluded the, you are a vessel by which he's doing his work. And therefore, you have to be able to hear from him all day, every day. So not just on Sundays or not just on the weekend retreat, not just maybe at a mission trip, and maybe not even just in the 1 hour devotional you might be doing in the morning, but you are like learning to hear his voice, and you can detect it in the middle of the conflict negotiation. And you can like go inward for a moment and be like, Holy Spirit, what do I do right now? And you can hear his voice and you can come out. And that is part of the, and then do it. And that's part of the sanctification journey. And I'd say the last 5 years, I got into Faith and Work like 11 years ago. And the last 5 years have been very heavily on this. How do you attune to the Holy Spirit in the hard meeting? How do you do that? That's a whole nother speech. Maybe I can talk about that next year. And out of that fruit of the Spirit is how we love people well. What does it look like to love a supplier that kind of screwed you a bit? What does it look like to actually love a competitor? What does it look like to love a competitor? What does it look like to have such an abundance mindset that you are willing to love a competitor and not have a fixed pie game? Okay, and then what does it look like to love the world, to love our industries? And we'll get to that in a minute. So I'm going to blow through this particular model here because, interestingly, this model is in the book. And as you know, the book is like primarily for pastors because the whole second half of it is about implementing faith and work from the pulpit in the church, in the classes. But the first 5 chapters are for everyone. They're for business leaders and pastors. And this model is in it, and business leaders like it, and pastors are just kind of like, oh, business leaders are always taking pictures of it. So I'm like, I'm going to show this model today, and David liked it. But this is about embracing brokenness as a way forward. And so I realized when I first found Faith and Work theology, I had to understand the depth of my own sin at work for me to understand how God could work in my heart at work. And so I would call that personal brokenness. And that is what I have on the vertical axis here. How aware of you are you of your personal brokenness at work? Good, like red flags for it are jealousy pops up, unexplained anger, mad that someone else got your credit, mad you didn't get the promotion. It may be justified that you're frustrated you didn't get the promotion, but jealousy or territorialism is basically you have this pendulum that's swinging all day, every day from I am better than to I am not enough. And how high that pendulum is swinging, that's kind of like a little bit of a meter on what's going on with you, like your brokenness showing up at work. So understanding your brokenness at work, and sometimes your brokenness is showing up as unbelievable excellence. Mine was. I needed work and achievement to make me whole. That was part of my brokenness. It was incredibly socially acceptable at the Boston Consulting Group. They loved someone that can just be devoured by needing to work more to feel good about themselves. And so my brokenness was showing up as I needed achievement to feel love. I did not understand God's love enough for me to feel his love without achievement. And so the way, how aware of you, how you, your brokenness shows up at work is built into this model. The other thing that's built into this model is how aware are you of broken systems? And that is the horizontal axis. And by broken systems, if you've had anyone in the hospital recently, even if every doctor, nurse, and billing person acted perfectly, it's probably you had some bump or nightmare because the system itself is broken across the three payer model, the three not three payer model, but the payer and the patient and the one that makes decisions are not aligned well. That is a broken system. Racism is a broken system. We have a lot of broken systems showing themselves in the world right now. And so how aware are you of broken systems? How aware are you of your personal brokenness? And this is a way to think about how to embrace a way forward in your faith and work. And I would say that you have to have high understanding of both to be able to fully embrace what the gospel offers you in terms of faith and work. So let's look at this one. This is a little bit small, so bear with us on this. But if you are low on awareness of system brokenness, that's the horizontal axis, and you are low on awareness of personal brokenness, that's the vertical axis, if you're not really looking at how you're broken or how the things around you are broken, you're probably pretty self-focused. If you're trying to put your faith at work, it's probably pretty nominal because you're just working to get ahead, most likely. So you're not really worrying about what's broken unless it fulfills you to be better at being you. So that would be a self-focus. A lot of people, particularly that grew up in denominations in the South, they tend to end up in the top left quadrant. And so a lot of awareness of personal brokenness and sin, maybe not as much awareness of system brokenness, and a lot of focus on the purpose of Christianity is salvation and heaven, and therefore work is just kind of like happening in the background. And so that leads to faith at work, meaning ethics and evangelism. And so you're aware of your brokenness, you're aware of what God has done for you, but you are there to try to be the good guy at work, do the right thing, love other people, be kind, and you are there to evangelize. So a lot of this times this shows up by being the good guy, I'm the one that people can talk to, maybe a Bible on my desk or a cross behind me or a cross around my neck. But it is a valid and good expression of faith and work. The one in the bottom left, self-focus, not a good and valid expression of faith and work. That's self-individualism. Top left is a good and valid expression of faith and work. I would just argue it's truncated. Bottom right, you notice every broken system. You are here to fix the school system. You see the inequities in the schools. You see that the public schools in Williamson County get more than the rural public schools, and you are here to be the savior. A little bit less focused on your own brokenness, though. A little bit focused on the importance of how our brokenness is showing up and how us being the savior is another distorted view of work. And so this would be a high social impact focus. And again, another valid expression of faith and work in the workplace, but again, truncated. It's a truncated. And so in the top right, I would say, is a holistic way forward of really embracing all that the gospel asks of us. And so if you deeply understand your own brokenness at work, and you deeply understand the broken systems you're working within, then suddenly you have the opportunity for the cultural mandate, go out and create flourishing, the Great Commission, go out and make disciples, the Great Commandments, love God, love others, and then what I call the Great Requirement, which is to act justly, love mercy, and walk humbly with your God. And this is a more holistic view of what faith and work can be in the workplace. And it includes the ethics and evangelism, and it includes the social impact. But it's more holistic because you're looking at the brokenness of yourself, you are understanding the brokenness of others and seeing that as an opportunity for their renewal, and you are seeing the brokenness in systems, and you are able to partner with God who is renewing all things to himself. I'm just curious, just a quick hand raise. Are you more likely to notice personal or system brokenness in your day-to-day life? A lot of times it depends on your denominational upbringing. How about who is more likely to notice personal brokenness in their day-to-day life? So about a third to a half of you. I grew up in a denomination that was very focused on systems. I just could look around and see everything wrong with all the systems, but maybe what not so much as myself. So that's how I grew up. And then who's not really sure? They're like, totally new concept. Need to think about this. Phil was just giving me the 5-minute mark, and I thought he was telling me that he was not sure about his brokenness. I'm like, I can help you out with that, Phil. Okay, so I want to help you imagine your industry for a minute through the lens that we talked about at the beginning. So, you know, I have a few things up here: film, social media, songwriting, healthcare, law, general business, being a baker, working in AI. I want to just imagine your industry for a minute. And we're going to look at the industry being reminded that the creational goodness of your industry. So, you know, when Paul was talking to those in Colossae, he said, "For in him," meaning Jesus, "all things were created, things in heaven, on earth, visible, invisible, whether thrones or powers or rulers or authorities, all things have been created through him and for him. He is before all things, and in him all things hold together." All things: real estate, banking, roads, restaurants. It was really hard for me to get my head wrapped around this when I learned this. All things, political, economic, vocational, all the craziness going on in our country right now, our city after the storm, all the hubbub about NES and its leadership and trees, should they have been cut more or not cut more, all things. He is making, it is a very strong Christological claim in Scripture. All things were created in him. And he is reconciling all things to himself. So I love to help people think through this chart. And basically, we're going to take an industry and we're going to look at it through the lens of all things. Industries are all things. We're going to look at it through the lens of creation, fall, redemption, restoration. And when you're thinking, well, I could never do this with my boss, I work in a publicly traded company, you can just use the language ought, is, can, will, which I did not come up with. It's I give credit to that with Mike Metzger. But ought, is, can, will is just secular language for creation, fall, redemption, restoration. So let's take banking and think through, if banking, let's take corporate banking, corporate lending. If banking was its best version of itself, its God-given version, the image of God within brought into banking, what would it ought to have been? And film, we'll do the same thing. It is a redistribution of resources is ultimately what banking is. And God is a redistributor of resources. That is part of his quality. He cares about resources. He cares about caring for other people. Film, God is truth and beauty and creativity. And in its best version of itself, film can be truth and beauty and creativity. So think about your own industry for a minute and think about what is creationally good about your industry. What ought it to have been if God invented it and it was still perfect? I think almost every industry I have been able to think of, with the exception of pornography and the illicit drug trade, does seem to have some creational goodness. Sometimes you have to like look a little further to find it. And then you're all very aware of the fall, because you see what is with your industry. You see what's frustrating about it, what feels broken about it, what feels like too big to possibly ever fix, what feels exploitative, unjust, hurtful. So if you think about your industry, what is it now? Where is the fall in your industry? Where does your industry have system brokenness? And I would say in banking, there's compensation. Just as a couple, I'm not trying to be holistic and analytically exhaustive here. But in banking, there's compensation distortion. There's access inequity, right? So depending on who you know or certain opportunities you've had, you might have more access to lending than if you don't. So those were a couple of areas where it wouldn't be as God might have it. That's another way to say it. Someone once said, hey, Missy, if Jesus came and sat in the conference room right now and saw everything you were doing, what would he say? I was like, that is a really interesting question. So I started asking that question to some people at times if they were asking me to ask that question in their own way. And one guy, I said, what if he came and sat in your conference room and knew everything about your company, what would he say? And he goes, oh, he'd say I need to be paid less. Like immediately came out of his mouth, you know? So I would say the fall is representative of what would be how God wouldn't have it. And so for film, it's sexualized, it's violent, there's no truth of the consequences at times. That's part of the fall in film. And then you think of Jesus coming and making all things new and asking you to help him make all things new right where you are. And so I worked with a woman at Goldman Sachs who was working on programs of access to help people with certain types of startups have access to the resources of Goldman Sachs. There was a pay distribution project going on, education and transparency, helping people understand if they're taking on a loan corporately, what are they really getting into if they sign their own mortgage as their collateral. Being transparent, a bit more transparency, education. And in film, I met with an actor, and she said, oh, I'm happy to play an adulteress. I'm happy to be a drug addict. I'm happy to play all these parts as long as the natural consequences of these behaviors are shown and they aren't glamorized and the story unfolds showing the destruction of these behaviors. I thought that was such an interesting way to think about a way to be redemptive in film. And then the will is starting to imagine, what could my industry be if? What could my industry be if? If God came back tomorrow and we were in the new heaven and the new earth, what could it be like to be in commercial real estate if it was perfect and everybody acted equitably and just and loving and mercifully and perfect? What would that be like? And so in banking, it could be perfect, equitable, fair, and accessible distribution of capital amongst society. That could be a perfect view of banking. In film, it could be truth and beauty in a format that moves the heart and mind towards Jesus. That could be a perfect view of film. And so we just have about a minute left. I just want to ask you to just sit in silence for about 30 seconds. And this goes back to that heart level, so that. And just ask God what he wants you to take away about your own industry or your own company that he might want you to see today. About the goodness and the brokenness. Just jot down what comes to mind. I'm going to conclude with a quote from Tim Keller and Catherine Alsdorf from Every Good Endeavor. And I think this book was in your bags a couple of years ago. It's one of my all-time favorite Faith and Work books because I think it's the first one that I really got it. And it says, if the God of the Bible exists and there's a true reality beneath and behind this one, and this life is not the only life, then every good endeavor, even the simplest one, pursued in response to God's calling, can matter forever. And I also want to tell you before I conclude that the 28-year-old daughter that I started with at the beginning that was very sick, that led to my next level surrender, that led to me going to seminary, that led to me finding Faith and Work theology, that led to me standing here, well, I am racing out of this conference today rudely because I think it's kind of rude to speak at a conference and then leave. And the reason why is because my other job is mother. And I don't know if you can see what those cookies say, but they say she said yes. She is literally this moment on a jog getting engaged. And so I am going to be a mother and host a surprise party. And so I will not be able to stay with you guys and go to the workshops and visit. But thank you guys for having me. And Josh knows how to find me.